Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 12, with the very, very special guests Matt Wills and Nikesh Shukla. As always, the Thanks for Trying podcast contains a lot of fucking sweary language and we get horrendously drunk. Big thank you to Seb White for recording the show. Enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 12 of the Thanks for Trying podcast with my very special guests, Nikesh Shukla and Matt Wills. Yeah, that was super noisy. I loved it. Thank you both so much for coming. I really, really appreciate this. Right. It's a beautiful, beautiful spring day.
It's lovely.
I'm glad the, what are they called?
Blinds.
What are they called? What are these things?
A resident writer.
We don't have this technology in Bristol.
Do you not?
No, we have curtains.
Just curtains.
I know.
So curtains are better than blinds, though.
But it's a bit 90s, really.
Yeah, I prefer curtains. I'm a curtain man. Curtains are overrated.
How do you feel about drapes?
I think his first album was great.
I was waiting.
Oh, like, first I was like, Drake. Are we actually going to talk about Drake? No one ever talks about Drake. If everyone talks about Drake and
I just could get
to
two Drakes just to cover my blinds. Oh, I don't know what I'm talking about.
I was about to make a worse dad joke and say,
"You are actually a dad, so you're allowed."
Yeah, and I'm allowed to. And now, but now I've referenced that it's going to be a dad joke. I kind of offset that. We know it's going to be unfunny.
Go on.
But a good tip for closing drapes is to start from the bottom, and then you've made it.
Here we go. And we're not even drunk. And
see
it's
you later.
Here is the day. Wow. So, I mean, Nikesh, I haven't seen you in a long time. So, I'm going to go in before Matt just starts, you know, just shouting and doing some kind of internal diatribe out loud. So, he's going to break and stuff.
Throwing the books over.
You know, I haven't seen you in fucking ages. And he's never seen you. But it's, you know, it's been amazing and so exciting to watch, like, how your career's propelled. And so it's very inspirational as well for people to see and see that.
I'm just glad that somewhere around 2007, 2008, I realised that I was a really average rapper and gave that up. Because the thing about...
Was you actually a rapper?
I was a really bad rapper for a bit. And the thing about rapping is, like, you have to be amazing and you have to keep, like, telling everyone that you're amazing again and again. Or you can be shit but have a thing.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, there are some really shit rappers out there, but they've got a thing.
Bad.
But, like, the worst type of rapper you could be is a really average rapper. Yes. And so when I realised I was okay, I was like,
yeah. That should be a rap name, though. Yeah. Okay. Then you'd have been fine. Everyone knows. Like, let's put the most average rapper in London. He's going to come down and give you an average
show.
That's
his thing. Yeah. He's so average. You're not going to be slightly bemused.
He's not even solid. He's okay.
He's not even so solid. He's basically tepid.
Yeah. Occasionally, you'll be perplexed for a moment. Occasionally, when did you decide? So the first book, Coconut Unlimited,
which is about three average rappers,
precisely.
Yeah,
fucking brilliant. But when did you decide to write that and go, actually, I'm gonna do this.
I mean, I was always writing when I was also an average rapper, but there just came a point where I thought I need to not do both of these things. I need to do one of them.
Yeah.
Because I'd written like two book length things while I was being an average rapper, and they were okay, but, you know, they weren't publishable. Yeah. And then I thought, well, all right, let's just write a novel properly. And the thing that kind of came to me, the thing that amused me, was like sort of writing this sort of fictional account of like some really average rappers. So Coconut Unlimited is about three kids in this, three Asian kids in this all white private school.
Yeah.
And like they really identify with gangster rap because that's like amazing. It's either identify with gangster rap or identify with the grandchildren of your colonial masters. And so they form a rap crew, but they're really shit. And the whole thing is kind of building up to like them doing an open mic at the end and just being really, really terrible. Spoiler alert.
In Harrow?
Yeah, in Harrow. Where I grew up.
Of course. I mean, I must have met you at Trinity at some point. I'm sure it would have been. Because Trinity was, I guess, a hub of future talent. A future talent that came out of that place.
Yeah, I didn't really go out. Like I didn't know any.
I just did at home and did all the raps.
Yeah. I mean, while everyone was going out and having fun, I was in the lab
cooking them heaters.
Straight banging.
But it's just as well I decided to not do that because, The Good Immigrant has been completely just bizarre. Like none of us thought it would be as big as it has been, but it's just been huge.
It's wonderful, the support, and it's just, you can even just from seeing you retweet, like people around the world kind of reading it and it being on bookshelves, that must be an incredibly validating kind of experience to get. I know I get that when people message me about my music or something. I'm like, whoa, I'm too busy in my own world that I don't really realize it traverses that kind of, you know, landscape.
And also, like, it is a weird thing when someone comes up to you and, like, they say that a thing that you've done has, like, changed their life in some way. And you're like, oh, my God.
And you can make an impact.
I still fart in the bath and think it's funny. Do you know what I mean?
It forever will be. No one's doubting it. And as a dad, you're meant to be doing this thing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Because kids love it. Not that I fart in baths with kids very often, but I'm just imagining that the kids would love it.
You are but a kid yourself.
Yeah. Brilliant, amazing. And the first thing I say.
So Good Immigrant came out last year, and it was primarily funded by, I guess, by people that wanted to read it, and that was the great experiment funding like a book like that, because I know I see lots of Kickstarters and all of that stuff.
I was doing a lot of work around like the lack of representation for BAME writers, and
for people that don't know what that is, because even I had to look it up like last year.
Ethnics.
Okay.
people of colour, black, Asian and minority ethnic writers, and one of the things that you're always told, like whenever you go, oh, there should be more books by black, Asian and minority ethnic writers, people are like, well, people don't really read those books, they don't really sell very well. And you're like, wow, that's really doubly insulting. Yeah. On the one hand, my skin color is a marketing trend, on the other hand, it's not a very lucrative marketing trend. What do I believe? Thankful. And there was this publisher called Unbound, and so it runs just like a normal publisher, but they raise all the money to put the book out through crowdfunding.
Right.
So like the moment the book actually hits the shelves, it's making money.
People want it. Yeah. It's not like taking a risk. It's like, yo, and that's fucking amazing for you, because when you're putting it out, people should be like, oh man, we want to have this, it's paid for, and you're not scared it's going to go out and it's going to flop.
And that's the beautiful thing about the end of the book, is there's just lists of people that have funded it.
Yeah.
It's so nice. I found myself getting emotional like just reading through the names. I was like, yo, that's sick. I didn't even know my brother. Like, you know, I bought
your brother's in the
book. I saw my name. I was like, yeah. And then I looked, I was like, what, Tanner was on it? Yeah, that's right. Do you have support in this? What we can say is my Miss L, who wrote a chapter in the book, is my sister-in-law. I guess surely that's probably, yeah, come on. Of course that would be fine.
Wait, what sneaky's going down to?
Because she goes under the name Miss L.
Why?
Well,
she's still got to get work.
Yeah, still got. So what Miss L is an amazing writer that does a thing called Cast and Call Woes, or Woes. I can never remember, it's plural or singular.
Singular.
Cast and Call Woe, where she gets primarily the most misogynistic, horrible casting calls that go around to actors.
Oh, they're insane.
Yeah, and makes them public. And there's some fucked up shit that's in there,
like,
man.
She's middle aged, so we're looking for someone who's 30 plus.
Who looks about 25?
Oh god, but you've got wonderful, wonderful people, and of course Riz did a chapter. My favorite actually was Nish Kumar's. I thought was just
Nish is hilarious.
I just found myself busting up every single line whilst reading his chapter.
And the thing is, I remember like when he was tweeting loads about it. I didn't know him then, and I just thought this is so Nish. Someone from like the outright basically nicked this stand-up comedian Nish Kumar's press photo and used it to create this meme of like either an angry or a confused Muslim. So like these guys were using this really, really horrific like racist fucking memes with Nish's face, and Nish was like, part of me is bothered because I'm not even like I'm not Muslim, but also like
the key point,
the other part of me is like, so what? I'm not Muslim. Just don't use my fucking photo.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And like he had no control over it. And so he wrote this chapter about the whole experience.
Oh, amazing.
That's brilliant. That's so good.
That's the wrong way to go viral.
You're in it. When you become a meme, it's always going to be a bad idea.
And he embraced it, which is such a beautiful thing as well. And I guess another thing, which we can talk about more later as well, is... J.K. Rowling, of course, supported it, which is quite an interesting...
I love Harry Potter. Sick.
Yeah.
And that's like... And tweets about it, and like, she's, you know, that's still quite an exciting thing.
Yeah, it is really exciting. And it's also weird because like, it's... You know, you see how quickly people are like, J.K. Rowling made this book famous. And you're like, we did some work as well,
yeah,
you know.
Just a little bit, yeah.
But like, yeah, so... I think she's a big fan of Musa Okwonga's work, and so I think must have just seen it on his timeline. And yeah, she gave us $5,000 to make the book, which made her like the patron of the book, and that's she's great. Been super supportive. And
how does it cost to make a book?
Yeah, how, I mean,
like, I don't know. Is books expensive? Yeah, I ain't bought a book in about 4 years, and it was a Russell Brand book, so I can't much about books. I own 2 books, Russell Brand, and the one
my book
How to Pick
one,
Up Girls.
My Bookie Work 2.
I think it's Bookie Work 2, and I got the one, what's it called? Not The Secret, the one about picking up girls by...
Oh, no, that's awful.
Yeah.
That what a terrible book.
Yeah, I know, but it was...
What, the game?
By a fucking great
Neil
book.
Strauss.
10 out of 10. God.
What an awful book. You've just got back from tour.
Yeah, just gone back, toured with Sagala and then toured with Bastille.
Wow.
All across Eastern Europe, which was insane.
Like, okay. Yeah.
I've never it's one of those faces that you never think like I'd never think of going that. Instantly yeah. to go to like Eastern Europe straight away. It would not be like a holiday thing like, yo, should we go get some lads and go to Russia? But going, it literally completely changed my life, changed my perception.
And you were saying it's very different to the way people perceive Russia.
So crazily different. Completely perception that the media shows of Eastern Europe and what I experienced was worlds apart. Like, you see pictures, you never see the pictures of Russia of the things that I saw. Went to the Red Square, and it's probably the most beautiful, breathtaking thing I've ever seen, just monuments and insane. In the architecture, the people were so amazing. There is still this kind of underlying thing. Yeah. And I did get in a fight in a bar because they wouldn't let a gay guy into the bar, which I just thought was insane. Like, we hired this bar to have a party at the end of the shows. And these
gay... was it the bouncers that didn't...
Bouncers. And they were like so sound. And then out of nowhere, this guy just flipped and changed. He's like, oh, when it's this guy, you can't come in. And I was like, why can't he come in? Oh, we know he's gay. What? And I'm like, I fully was like, right, well, we're taking our shit and we're going. I ain't paying the bill. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. And then... he completely was like, oh, I'm really sorry, let them all in. But I'm just like, if that's a thing, like that should never be a thing. Like, it's just a couple, like, it's a place to have a couple of drinks. So I found that scene that is there.
Yeah.
But in like terms of thing, it completely changed my fucking mentality, man. It was insane. And the girls out there are beautiful. We've got time for the girls out there. Shout out to all the Russian ladies.
You're a pop star already. this is what's happened. How big were the Bastille shows? Because they looked like
insane.
They were ridiculous.
So like, before I went on like the Bastille shows, the biggest show I did like was like 2,000 people. It was like a support slot or something. So then we obviously went out there and it was like arenas, so like 10,000 people, was like, and I couldn't afford to take my band, so it was just me and the guitar. And I never played shows that big, so I'm coming out, there's 10,000 people, and it's just me and my guitar, like, fuck, what am I gonna do? And I was like literally forgetting my stuff. But like, after like the second show, like the crowds were mad supportive out there. Because they just love music. And I thought it was almost a little bit more embracing than some of the English crowds that I've
played. Yeah, definitely.
Where it's kind of like, oh, do we like it? Do we not? Is it cool? Out there, it's just like, is it music? I love it. I want to have fun.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was fucking amazing, man. Like, I'd say let's go. Let's go get wasted. Let's go Russia.
Let's go Russia. I'd love to go to Russia. How cold was it?
Fucking freezing, mate. Yeah. I was going to give up smoking because I couldn't stand standing outside. I was literally like, I was literally wearing like, I had no like thermal clothes because I threw away all my clothes when I was moving house. So I had like no thermal clothes. So I was wearing like women's leggings underneath like pairs of jeans.
Pretty
and then,
warm
like,
though. Pretty warm.
Pretty damn warm. Women are onto something. We're leggings. Don't keep those things secret. We need them. Don't keep them all to yourself. You're being greedy.
Listen,
with the leggings.
I have a pair of men's thermals. They were cat print. They were kitten print, right?
Kitten
and
print.
And I'm like, yeah.
So you make it
look
more sexy.
But I tell everyone they're men's thermals. 100%. They're women's leggings.
Yeah.
But they're very warm.
Oh, mate, amazing.
This
my penis
my
has never been so free.
This is a confessional right now.
Just to let you know, I wear women's underwear sometimes. Life changing.
So that's great. And you're gonna go back on tour with them, or like what's the next? What's the
we're
next
planning
stage?
On doing some more shows with Bastille, mm-hmm. but it was kind of crazy because the hype from the shows that started off from the start of the tour to the end of it meant that by the time I started off in Ukraine and ended up in Russia,
yeah,
all these kids had heard of me, and I'm like, I'm not famous in the UK, and so yeah. Going there to the point where the police were policing me and stopping kids from like getting to me. So I've been in One Direction for a couple of days. It was fucking sick. Wow. Mate. Went to some like children's store, which is basically Hamleys, and I wanted to buy a Russian Barbie because like, why not? Like. Like, I just wanted.
I mean, I can think of a few. Why not?
But I don't know. Sure. But like, I just went in. I was like, I really fucking want a Russian Barbie. Like that seems swaggy as hell. Like, with a fur coat and like a hat. I was like, I just want that. That's I didn't end up cool, buying yeah. one because so many kids turned up that I had to like hide in the back of Hamleys.
Or is it because you went? Oh, it's just like
Barbie. Yeah, but the Russian writing's really cool. They got letters and numbers and shit all in the same words. It's crazy. I know we have the same, but like sometimes there's just like a three in there, and I'm like, that's not a word. That's a number.
Come from?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh my, it's like Greek, isn't it? Like, they have the same. That's correct, don't they? I don't know. Any Greek people out there? Tell me what your letters.
You just message in. Sick, because you support Halsey as well, and so you've done a few of these big kind of tours.
Yeah.
That's sick. And what is next then? Because the album's coming up.
Yeah, so we just released the first single, Emily.
Yeah, Radio 1 played
Radio
1
that. Premiered. I got pissed up in a Wetherspoons and celebrated.
Good.
Swagged out, as every Fantastic. Person should do. Probably the best moment so far of my music releases, and I thought I'd celebrate in a Wetherspoons.
I mean, why
Because I'm
why
a classy
not?
Bird. also, and a white wine spritzer.
Everything is so cheap in Wetherspoons. I mean, you live in Bristol, so I imagine there's about 6 million Wetherspoons.
my friend Kit did a whole book of Wetherspoons carpets, because he realised that like every single Wetherspoons has its own bespoke carpet.
That's right.
And so he went around the country taking photos of them for
it's
a book
insane.
And like writing this sort of really weird experimental writing inspired by the carpets.
I think
really
Wetherspoons is underrated like massively. Like everyone kind of like, oh, we're gonna go Spoons. I'm like, nah, man, like you get a breakfast for £2 and like they're always amazing locations.
Not terrible.
No, it's not that bad. I've been there twice this week.
Vegetarian options.
Is I had a vegan thing yesterday and a Wetherspoons. I thought that was life changing. I was
vegan in Wetherspoons.
Yeah, innit?
I mean, to be fair, I think that's where we're going to revert back to that, because all of these brunch places with queues down the road are fucking aggressively boring, and they're so average.
Oh.
Like, you know, it's everything is eggs on toast, and I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of seeing the same people in there. I'm just going to go Wetherspoons instead.
Oh, mate, definitely. I want to ban avocados. I think avocados need to be stopped.
No.
Avocados need to be stopped. They're all over my fucking timeline every day. Everyone, you go for breakfast and everyone's like, avocado on toast. I'm like, fuck off. Like, eggs are way
They're
long.
The problem, not the avocados.
Yeah. I blame avocado eaters.
No, it's like, listen, kale, yeah? I was eating kale for a long time, all
You're
right?
You're so hipster. I was eating kale before anyone else was eating kale.
My dad was making kale back in the day.
Your dad was making kale.
So
how do
you're
make
pre-hipster.
Kale?
I'm pre-hipster kale. Yeah,
you are the most hipster this person. Is the I mean, maybe.
I always remember this conversation that, like, this is Nikesh will appreciate this a lot with a rapper called Jest, who is like the best, you know, to me and probably Nikesh and our generation. He's the best rapper to come from this country. And he was staying with me, and we were working on some stuff, and. We were sitting in my garden, this one I lived in Manor House, and And we were like, fucking hipsters, man. This was the time when Shoreditch was still kind of, it wasn't Shoreditch yet. The only two places you could go out was like Herbal and Cargo. And it was still kind of bad. You could still kind of get stabbed around
there. And you didn't want to go to Cargo on like a Tuesday night when all the like the dickheads in suits, like they've rolled their sleeves up.
And now they're everywhere. Now they're on everywhere and every night.
That's why I don't go to Shoreditch, man. You turn up and like, it's just like a load of guys that like, oh, mate, finish work, mate. Who's got a gram? You get what I mean? Oh, the wife don't know. I ain't going back for another hour. Who wants to go out? Someone give me a fucking Uber Select. And you're like, fuck off, mate. That girl doesn't want to sleep with you. Roll down your fucking sleeves, wear a pair of jeans, and you work in business. You're just a cunt. Like, you get what I mean?
I mean, that's factual. It's true. It is, like, you know it very well. You're very well versed in this in this character. Shoreditch. I appreciate it. Shoreditch.
Shoreditch is now the Shoreditch. Stag do destination of...
Is this a fact? Because I like, make it a fact.
Is it alternative facts?
Shoreditch was voted the best, worst place to go on a stag do by Time Out.
The worst place?
No, he's making it up.
Roll with it.
No, you get what I mean? So Kirsty and Phil from Off the Telly.
Kirsty and Phil!
They said that Shoreditch was the place to go to if you really, really wanted to put on your best shirt and your best shoes, but wear stonewashed jeans.
And have some like low-level cocaine and some really expensive drinks. You should go to Shoreditch.
Well, if they said it and they're off the telly, then it's happening.
Are Kirsty and Phil banging? That was something that's more interested in. Because are they not banging? I thought they were a couple, or am I complete? You know.
Seth doesn't know.
Okay, no one knows.
They're not a couple. Oh, he's Googled it. Fact.
Fact? Are they not?
No. I think they once shared an awkward glance over
a Foxton's table. Like, oh.
There was a bit of frisson in the air.
What's that?
Frisson is one of my favourite words of all time.
Bro, I've got the vocabulary of a small child. What's that? Is that a dog?
It's basically frisson is like the moment of electricity that kind of makes you go, whoa. It's like kind of like sexual tension or... You know, it's a lovely word. Anyway, speaking of frisson, I was in my garden with Jess.
Where did we end up? Kirsty and Phil fingering.
We were there and we were just complaining about his fucking hips, this shortage. It's all changed. Everything's changed. It's not like it was, you know, like when we used to be scared to walk places. And now we're just like, you know, people cross the road, you know, when you walk down and you're wearing a hoodie or something. Anyway, so we're just having a chat and then we looked at each other and went, and then he goes, wait a second, man. Look at us. And then and he goes, I'm an aging rapper that's like sleeping on your couch while we make records, and I also run a record label, and I write graffiti, and you're a producer that's currently gardening as we speak. You're currently gardening wearing a pink Dale Winton supermarket sweep jumper
with Crocs on, just for good measure.
And you're like, we are the problem. Maybe we're the problem.
You are the problem, mate. I'm not trying to point fingers, but I pointed fingers at you.
I had a beard as well. I rode a bike.
Oh, you did ride a bike, and you always had wraps. Raps. And that's like the signal of like someone's a hipster. They were like, oh, I'm not going to eat much bread. I'll get a wrap.
Yeah, I know. Cycling home with almond milk.
Oh, yeah, literally.
In one arm.
You probably lactate almond milk now.
I probably do, man.
Like 100%.
Lactate all sorts.
Facts.
Nikesh, are you still listening to rap as an average rapper and but a more than average rap fan? Are you still tuned in to everything?
I'm still convinced that boom bap is going to come back strong one day.
You know what? It has. I mean,
finally, my investment in the mid 90s has finally paid off. I might try selling some records.
I should
convince my wife I'm going to hold on to these one day.
They'll
be worth £3.50 and not the £1 I paid for them when Mr. Bongo shut down.
Oh, God,
listen, what's
boom bap? Boom bap rap is like the classic era. This is good that you're asking me this, because there's people that listen that might not fucking know any of this shit. Because the people that listen to this podcast aren't necessarily people that from the rap days. They might not even be people that listen to rap now. You know, they just fucking, you know, they love the fact that three people get absolutely smashed. And
also, talk about Matt's young Russian fans are probably like,
what is boom bap?
What is boom bap? It's a great sound.
It's true. Can we ban it? So, boom bap is... Boom Bap is like classic golden era hip hop of like mid to late 90s, where it's epitomized by Tribe Called Quest, Pete Rock, you know, that kind of sound of like big breaks with samples, a lot of like filtered samples as their bass lines.
Yeah.
It doesn't, sometimes more angry, it can be whatever, conscious and whatever, but Boom Bap kind of is epitomized by that era.
Sounds cool.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. You know, as much that new Tribe album. Made me feel very emotional.
Yeah,
the way that they had really, really integrated Fife Dog into that album.
And I don't know how. I mean, I guess they must have been records that Fife, you know, before he died.
He just dropped in.
It was sad. Yeah. Well, not sad. It was really, really great, but it did make me feel sad.
Like, yeah, I felt bad because I didn't really listen to A Tribe Called Quest until Fife died.
Yeah,
which is kind of really, really strange. Like discovering something because I saw the news about Fife, I was like, "Who is this guy? Why That's do I cool, know some though. Of his bars? Why do I know some of these things? But I've never invested my time into it." So then when I see it, like that happened, that's when I got into A Tribe Called Quest. I was like, oh, this guy's fucking sick. But it's so sad discovering someone so talented with such like an amazing like flow and everything. And then going, oh, he's not here anymore. It's really strange. Like,
and like Q-Tip is the cooler guy, but I reckon I always thought Fife's the better rapper.
That's also because he was diabetic and that made him even cooler.
Yeah, funky. He was the funky diabetic.
Big up my brother and Fife, the two funky diabetics.
Tiernan is the last of the Mohicans of the funky diabetics. No, now
big up Tiernan, man, keep it strong. But yeah, and then obviously from UK rap, from this Boom Bap rap came. You know, we talk a lot on the podcast of UK rap alumni that have come through and, you know, absolutely killed it, such as Riz in your book and Ed Skrein, regular on the podcast. And
Underline!
You know what I mean? And
every time I said, what was that? The Transporter film movie. I was watching it and I just, the whole time, I'm just in my head going, Underline!
So that was really his old crew.
It was really hard.
He used to be in a crew called Underground Alliance.
Oh, fuck, that's gangster.
And that was...
Is that like the name of the TFL before the TFL?
Funnily enough, their logo was...
Of course it was.
A bastardized version of the title.
Genius.
I love having this because it's like having to explain stuff as well. It's quite interesting because it makes you think about it from an objective standpoint. You're like, shit, I haven't explained this before. This is weird. Yeah. But you're right.
Yeah, it's like we're historians.
I like these things, but why do I learn them? Where do they start?
Yeah, what is this? No, but I feel you. Like, even, you know, there's an interesting thing about discovering someone after they die, and that a lot of people look down on it. They're like, oh, you know, you didn't know Jay Dilla before he died. Like, you don't deserve to listen to Jay Dilla. And I'm like,
that's bollocks.
It's bullshit. Yeah,
people were so precious about things. Even like now with like grime coming back and all that shit. Like when I was a kid, I listened to it.
Grime coming back.
Well, like it never left. But like it's so hyped now, right, and like kid like. I was dating this girl and her little sister's like 14 years old and she's coming at me and being like, oh, we heard of this new artist called Skepta, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, that's crazy. And like, but yeah, it's like, it's kind of where it comes from and like where, how.
And people are mad at that. People are mad. They're like, well, how you shouldn't, you only listen to grime now. It's cool. You know, it's in the charts, so it's cool. And I'm like,
but it does, I get annoyed though.
I don't mind.
Some people listen to it, like in the music industry, I found some people are like, tuning into it because it's cool to like it. It's like, oh, well, you should listen to grime because it's the cool thing.
Yeah.
And like, I'll like release a tune and someone's like, oh, you need to get a grime rapper on a remix. I'm like, why?
Yeah. But what's really funny has been like seeing loads and loads of rappers, like some average ones, pointing at myself. And like,
Corin.
But like, but like seeing them all go off and do other things. And like, and when Doc Brown dropped his new track last week and he was doing that double time thing, he was like, oh man, I've really missed like hearing Doc Brown be fucking amazing on the mic.
He's sick.
And you you forget how talented a rapper he is because like all the I mean the comedy stuff's amazing, but
it's genius.
But like he is a fucking sick.
Brilliant.
It takes a brilliant rapper to be able to go, I'm gonna focus on making it funny because I can.
That's true. Even like I watched something. I thought I'd seen all of his comedy skits, and I watched the other one 2 days ago about him wishing David Attenborough was his granddad. And it's fucking so. And I'm like, how the fuck do you write this? Like,
it's
you have to be a sick rapper to begin with, and a sick writer in order to put yourself in that mind state. Have you ever? I don't know if it's a thing, but have you ever ghost written like?
No.
No. Would you ever like write someone's biography?
Oh my god, are you Drake's ghostwriter? that's the plot twist, you know.
Stacey Solomon's like, I want to write an autobiography. Would Nikesh Shukla write it for me?
How much are we talking?
Oh, is it like, if it's good money, I'll do it.
Yeah,
but you have to spend a year with Stacey Solomon.
I mean, she seems like a nice person. Oh. I reckon she'd be fun.
All right.
Wasn't she on X Factor?
For free? No.
Wasn't she on X Factor? Was she the one?
Yeah, X-Factor? She was, yeah.
Oh, right, that team.
And she also, having been into Savers yesterday, she also has her own line of perfume.
Oh, no way. In Savers. Yeah. That's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the dream.
What is Savers? Savers? Is that like Lidl?
I'm explaining everything to you.
Yeah, innit? I've been away for so long, I've forgotten it. I couldn't find Soho yesterday.
It's the pound shop that Hackney forgot to gentrify.
True. Oh. So basically where I live.
Mate, my favourite one in Shepherd's Bush, Knightsbridge Road, there's a shop that is everything 99p, more or less. And I'm just like, yo brother, that means you can charge anything. Like, that is not, it's like more or less, like
more or less,
more or less 99p. It could be 10 quid, it could be 98p, more or less. I'm like, brother, that is great marketing. You feel like you're getting cheap, but you ain't getting shit.
No, well, if you're ever bored one day and want to go into a pound shop, fill a basket full of stuff and go up there and ask them each time, how much is this?
I reckon Stacey Solomon probably does that with all her perfumes.
Really does.
How much is it? Is it actually a pound?
I want to know how these people get these perfumes, because Michael Bublé's got one in there too. Like, a lot of people have got their own. I want to know what I have to do to get my own
line.
What
does Bublé smell like?
I don't know, but I don't know if I'd want to smell like Corey.
come on. I smell delicious. Yeah, I smell fucking delicious. I smell like cigarettes and vodka.
Right, yeah. It smells all right.
Cigarettes, vodka, and more cigarettes.
And angst.
Yeah, fear. That's what I smell like. So talk to me. So I want you to tell Matt something I know about very well, because I thought it was fucking amazing, and something you've probably spoken about to the death. But Matt, I'm assuming, has no knowledge of it.
Sorry.
Around your second book, Meat Space.
Yeah.
You sent I'm not even going to explain. It just involved meat actually being in space. So you...
Oh, no.
I sent some meat into space to promote my...
meat space. Like, mail my meat.
My friend Nick, shout out Nick, who does all my book covers. He was like, well, why don't... We were at the pub one day, and he was like, well, what can we do on... like, because the book was about social media, and it's about, like, people who tweet too much. And he was like, what can we do on social media to kind of promote the book? And I was like, I don't know, like, have a hashtag. All right. Cutting edge thing. Yeah, the boat out. Go on. I charged myself a six-figure salary for that consultancy. And he was like, well, why don't we send some meat into space? Because it was called Meat Space. And I was like, yeah, good one, Nick. And he went away and researched it. And he was like, for £233, we could send some meat into space.
How do you do it? How do you send meat into space?
We bought a tandoori lamb chop from Tayabs.
Yeah.
The best place.
The best lamb chops in London.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Yep.
Yeah.
They do some good vegan things.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I was gonna sit there with my lamb chops tonight and be like, well, I have to experience this. I've been vegetarian, but you have to experience these lamb chops.
We bought a weather balloon and a GoPro, and we basically made like a pod out of the polystyrene casing that comes with the GoPro. And mounted the GoPro in it. Mounted like the fork with like the lamb chop, blew up the weather balloon,
and sent
phoned up the RAF to tell them.
You have to warn them.
You have to get a license and stuff. You're sending a lamb chop into space.
Yeah,
but like, we don't own space. Like, surely we have to. I don't know.
And then we sent it up into space. And
that's insane.
Yeah, and the video went viral. Wow. To the point where, and this, I think this will be the highlight of my career. Paul Merton made fun of me on "Have I Got News for You?"
No, insane.
Which I think, you know, that's pretty cool.
Fucking cool.
I got a withering fucking put down from Paul Merton, who thought I was a fucking idiot for doing it.
Oh, I think it's genius.
That's fine. I got taken the piss out of on that. I went on Taskmaster.
That's on the planes, you know.
Is it?
Yeah.
What, episode?
Yeah, I watched it on a flight back from Russia.
You were on Taskmaster.
I was on Taskmaster.
Well, just in the background.
No, I was Doc's special guest. And
like, always the bridesmaid.
You know
the
bride. What I mean? And they put my photo up on the big screen, and one of them, the guy from In Between Us, what's his face? Greg Davies, he was there, and they were all just like, Doc, I can't believe you're inviting a common criminal onto the show. Come on, bruv. To be fair, you could have gunned me a lot worse. And I had bars ready for the end when I came on. I was like, okay, I'm going to go at you. I'm going at you. I've got things to say. And then the credits rolled, and I was like, oh.
Oh, right. Man.
That's the end of that. I didn't get to, I got rapping. Wired up. I was going to do it. Anyway, so I had a question about this. Before we go into how they discovered it, because that's quite interesting in itself, yeah, how they discovered the lamb chop and discovered the camera and how you got it back. How did you, what was the adhesive you used on the fork? I always wanted to ask you, how did it stay on?
Gaffer tape.
What, you put on with a fork?
Put it through a fork, put a cork on the end of it, because, which was a last minute addition.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that wasn't a last-minute addition. Like, Nick put some cork on the end of it in case it fell to earth at high speed and fucking stabbed someone.
Because I just died by a pork chop. Like, that would be the best thing ever, to die by a pork chop. Sorry.
That's very dodgy.
And, like, our friend Rob came along for the ride. Like, he drove me to the Cotswolds because I couldn't drive at the time. And Rob ended up, like, retying all the knots because he was like, you guys don't know how to tie knots. And if Rob hadn't...
Is Rob a Boy Scout?
Probably. But, like, if he hadn't retied the knots, we also could have killed someone. We didn't think this through. We just thought, let's put some lamb in space.
Yeah, in it.
And, we just, like, I think there was, like, probably gaffer tape on the other side of it that you can't see with the camera. Because, like, the thing with the footage is we don't, like, the camera cuts out, so we don't actually see it come down, and we don't see what happens to the lamb job. But basically,
I want to know what happens to lamb in space. And that lamb that died for that season.
Was it cooked by the solar flares? That's what I want to know.
I mean, it was already cooked.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, of course. Right.
You cooked it?
Well, we bought it from a restaurant in Whitechapel.
Restaurant. Yeah, I just got a bit of raw meat.
Nah. No.
So it was perfectly adhesed.
It was risk assessed.
The
health and safety officer.
RAF were aware.
Sounds like an
so
excerpt
didn't
from
shoot
50
it down.
Shades of Grey.
What did the RAF say when you called them up and went, listen, mate, I'm just... Don't worry, it's not the Russians, it's not anyone.
It's not the alien attack.
It's not the aliens. We're just putting some meat into... Don't worry, it's cool, don't worry about it. What did they say?
They really didn't care, which made me think, we could have put a spy camera up. We're just launching the spy camera now. Are you guys okay with that? Yeah, we're fine. Cool, sure. Okay, cool.
Do you reckon they thought you weren't serious though, when you was like, yo, Wagwan, how's it going? Yeah, good. I've just got this idea.
I mean... I don't want to malign the forms. I don't want to basically tell you guys the lies that we told on the forms. We said it was a scientific experiment.
Well, it was a scientific. It was science.
It was science.
100%.
Can you put meat in space? Yes, you can.
You can. Fact. So it was found.
So yeah, it ended up being caught up in the threshing machine of some guy who is like a farmhand, and he. He phoned us up and he said, I found your lamb chop camera. Found your camera. Do you want it back? And Nick was like, yeah, we'd love it back. Thank you. And then we basically ended up in this 6-month ordeal with this guy where he would answer his phone. We'd arrange to meet him. He wouldn't show up.
What?
He would then like make up loads of excuses. And
your famous meme.
We didn't know what was going on, but he was really, really sketchy. And then one day I was waiting, like I gave him, I stupidly, like this is before we thought, this was around time we thought this guy's probably a bit weird.
Yeah.
I gave him my home address and I was like.
Genius.
And then I changed my home address. I said, oh, I'm no longer at this place. Meet me on the street. And I went like basically stood down the street from my house.
Like a drug deal.
And waited for him.
Snipers on the roofs.
And then he said, oh, I'm stuck in traffic, blah, 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 blah. And then he sent me another message that was meant for someone else. I think it was meant for his girlfriend. And that gave me two bits of information about him. That he'd played rugby that day. And he'd played rugby in the location of where he played rugby. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. So I went online. And I looked up rugby matches in that that area, and I found the amateur rugby team that he played for. I found his profile. He had lied about his name. Yeah, and like the whole thing suddenly got weird because I, the novel that I'd written was about like people who lie about themselves online. Social and like media. Yeah, and so and you ended up in this sort of weird situation of like life imitating art, and then like 4 months later, we just called the police on him, and the police, like the police, must have shit him up because. They end up phoning us up and going, we can't actually do anything about this because like we can make a phone call but that's it. We're like, fuck the police. And they were like, and they were really nice, but I like, but you know, I was raised on NWA, so yeah, like, I don't want to have to use you, but and so then it turned out that he had basically he'd been working on this farm, he'd fucked off back home, which was not where the farm was.
Yeah.
And like had sort of left really, really quickly and like fucked over the owners of the farm. And so the farmhands who were there still had the camera or was still lying in like a barn somewhere.
Yeah.
And so and they were like, so is there a reward for this? And we were like, after 6 months we were like, yes, there's a reward for it. And so we met them in like the KFC Yeovil or something.
Oh my days.
And we got the camera back. And yeah.
How much do you have to pay?
Like 50 quid.
Oh, that's fine. Oh,
yeah, that's fine. They must have bare cool. KFC that night. They got like four bucks.
That's fine.
We're eating lamb tonight, boys.
Guaranteed they spend it all immediately in KFC. Yeah.
They were like, we would have taken a tenner. Yeah, it was a weird 6 months. And like, The night that my mates showed up with the camera, like I was at home with the brand new baby who would not go to sleep. Yeah. And my wife was like, at the end of her tether, tired, like, please, can you make it go to sleep so I can go to bed? And I had this moment, they knock on the door. I open the door, crying baby. They hold up the GoPro and I'm like, looking at the baby, looking at the GoPro, looking at the baby going... do you mind looking after the baby? Because we sent some lamb into space. And yeah, and like when the thumbnail came up, we were like, definitely had a tear in my eye. It was beautiful, man.
I bet, because you have to watch this online because it is...
It's stupid.
You have to... Well, someone else ripped off the idea recently, didn't they?
Really? Yeah, there's been loads of like versions of it. Because like,
trends.
In the 6 months when we were waiting for our footage, someone did like a pizza slice in space and we were like, mother... I've been holding on to that bottle top for a really long time.
But yeah, for the dramatic effect. Yeah, and it worked.
Like a mic drop.
I'll pick it up.
No, you leave it there. It will forever be there.
I really want to clean up after myself. I'm in someone else's house. You know? It would be rude.
This is a fake house, actually. It's hired for this purpose. It's a model house. So, but that's... there's a pie in space, all of this shit. But the thing is that it was emotional when you can see... this bit of meat on the edge of... You can actually see it on the edge of space.
Against the curve of the earth, Matthew.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's like Felix Baumgartner when he did the red ball jump.
But more interesting.
Yeah, it's fucking sick.
Would you jump out of a...
No, fuck boy, that. I don't even go to Fort Park. Like, I can't do that shit.
Yeah.
I'm that guy that goes to Disneyland. Like, when I was a kid, I ran out of like the Lilo and Stitch ride because I couldn't deal with it because it was spinning too fast. Like, I'm a pussy. Yeah. Through and through, but I try to excel at everything I do. So, because I'm a pussy, I'm a really good pussy.
The escalators on the Berlin U-Bahn are really high. They spin me out.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah, no, I can't do that.
I'm not going to Berlin then.
Are we all people who are scared of heights?
So definitely scared of heights. Yeah.
Why do you need to go so high?
You don't have to go.
Why do you need to go for a walk along a cliff top? Yeah, go to the pub.
I don't go upstairs. Why do you need to go upstairs?
Yeah, so because you live on the bottom floor.
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't have to do it. I always said that the only way I would ever jump out of a plane as if I was a spy
and there were snakes on the plane.
And there were snakes on, and I was a spy and I was getting in an assassination situation, and then like I had a Union Jack parachute and I was wearing a tux,
like, fully going.
Yeah, if I was James Bond basically, then I would jump out of a plane, but that is the only way. And then someone pointed out to me, they tried to call my bluff, they were like, you know, you can actually pay for that experience now. You can pay for the James Bond experience where you get chased by fake assassins.
I'll happily pay for you to do it.
Maybe I'll have to do it.
Because for me, I feel like there's always an alternative to stuff. Like rather than jumping out of a plane, I'd rather just get stoned and zoom really quickly on Google Earth.
That's a perfect opportunity to break for the piss break, the tradition where we will return for a very tiny midday shot and for the second half of the podcast. So we're back on the Thanks for Trying podcast episode 12 in part two. We had our piss break. We've discussed many
Did
things.
You say kiss break?
We had our kiss break. The annual tradition of
the podcast every time it just makes up for a little like at least every, 5 every minutes guest, and comes back.
Every guest exchanges.
Well, I think it's exchange as what? STIs and emotions.
Yeah, you're fucking right.
That's what you call it. STIs and emotions.
STIs and emotions.
That's my first album. That's my album name. Like dropping.
Done. Sorted. And we're talking about how you do covers. Like you have a. But that's actually on my list. Look, rapping on stage, Matt.
Rapping on stage.
That's on my list. You do a bunch of covers in your set, which are fucking sick. And a lot of them are garage covers, right?
Yeah, like I have. A whole middle thing where I just do like a collection of garage songs.
It's but on the guitar. And
on
that's
a guitar,
it.
Like kind of changing up, not singing it like a garage way, just doing like, because the vocal melodies I've always thought were insane.
They're fucking brilliant.
Like amazing hooks, amazing everything. Yeah. So I always do like.
Are you going for like the John Lewis Christmas ad, like slowed down?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
you're three, sweet two, like one. A shark. When the girls say select.
With a dog bouncing.
Yeah, exactly. And the same child time. And the Christmas present. Yeah.
Sweet Like Chocolate Boy, you were saying you did. That's fucking cool as fuck that you put that in your set. And you also do freestyles, which I love watching you do your sets, man. I love it. I'm always there and cheering you on and like fucking hitting people if they're not paying attention. It's fucking A&R cunts, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna fucking watch the show and I'm just there like wanting to stab everybody. But then it's fucking sick. The one bit of your shows I can't watch, I just can't do it, is when you do the freestyle raps.
Is it that bad?
It's not that it's bad. It's actually all right. It's pretty good. I can't watch it because I'm like, oh God, he's going to offend somebody.
It's happened a few times.
It's like Curb Your Enthusiasm waiting for like Matt to say something that people are going to be like, oh my God, he said. So tell Nikesh about maybe some of the worst moments that you've had.
Because like when you're a singer-songwriter, like when I first started off, like there's so many guys out there with guitar singing and writing songs about their ex-girlfriend, and I fall straight into that fucking category. And I like, so my whole thing was like this kind of, because when I grew up younger, I was so into rap music and freestyles, and it was really strange. In Kent, there was a little freestyle, like rap battle kind of vibe and scene going down. Great. And I was like 13-year-old, like fat kid in a tracksuit that wanted to get involved in it. Then realized I was awful at rapping, but I can make shit off the top of my head pretty quick. So then when I started doing my own shows, I always made it a thing that I'd get the crowd to say certain words and I'd like do a freestyle rap, because straight away when people aren't listening to you, their attention goes when you can call the guy in the front row and say exactly what he's wearing and say you'd probably sleep with his girlfriend. That's the kind of things that go down. But then one of the worst ones was I played a show in Westfield and
Shopping Village
Westfield Village. So it's like me and a guitar,
not,
it's Christmas,
not like there's Westfield kids, in Wiltshire.
No, but so I was like, oh, someone give me some words. Some guy said hunt.
Oh,
so I always said, like, I was doing this freestyle, I was just like, I didn't come out here to search for the hump, but it's not my fault that you're a fucking cunt. Forgetting that my voice had been played through every single store through the whole entire Westfield during Christmas, all the kids ice skating in front of me, and I've just called this guy a cunt, and everyone's like, I literally got dragged off the stage. But when I first started doing stuff, I'm playing shows in like small little bars with loads of drunk people, and I'm like doing open mics and things like that. So you tell drunk people, give me three words, I'm going to freestyle about it. The shit that came out, like someone be like, right, midget, dildo, like that says a lot about us as a nation, that you say, we're going to do a freestyle rap, what can you rap about? A midget and a dildo, go.
And you're like, this you're isn't like, my first midget dildo.
Yeah, this isn't.
Let me refer to my 8 songs I have about this subject. You mean,
this is not my first rodeo.
But yeah.
Sorry, before we carry on with this, that we've got the annual tradition of doing a shot that I've totally, completely skipped past. Even though it's the middle of the day, we're doing it anyway. I've only poured mini shots of a wonderful Icelandic vodka that I brought back from Iceland 2 days ago.
In Iceland, they just call it vodka.
That's a really good point. Okay,
who's the one? I'm thinking of a store, isn't it?
So we have to do it. I've only poured a little one, so it's not too bad. There you go. Cheers to you. Pleasure to see you. Santé.
You too.
Yeah, it's
quite nice.
Ooh. Hey, fucking nice.
That is smooth.
Really smooth.
It's Icelandic.
Icelandic. Everything is so expensive out there. I just thought I'd let you know.
Oh, mate. Same in Finland.
Apparently Iceland... Sorry, I just completely interrupted you.
No, go ahead.
Iceland had prohibition until like the late 80s. I did not know that.
Really?
Beer was illegal.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. But you could still drink spirits, but beer was illegal. But it's like, we went to the supermarkets just to like stock up and, you know, buy some stuff and, you know, cook a meal. And we were looking at aubergines, £8 each.
What?
Fuck.
Asparagus, £12.
No.
I was like, bruv, a little thing of like one in £1 bags of salad was like £6. Like,
what?
It's mad on all those countries.
An £8 aubergine.
An £8 aubergine. New album. Yeah, that's
£8
because there's a thing when I was in,
Moussaka.
Latvia or Estonia, or I can't remember where I was, but there's like a boat that goes between that country and Finland.
Right.
And everyone gets the boat because it's so expensive in Finland to drink and party. And the boat's still like the previous like economy and the previous like currency. That everyone goes in this boat and it's called the Bang Boat, where it's just a crazy party on a boat because no one can afford to go out in Finland.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. I regret I didn't do it. I'm going back time. Just to do it. You mean shit. Next tour I'm just going on boats,
because Norway's the same. Like, I always think you judge a place by how expensive their chocolate bars are, and in Norway
that's the fat kid inside you, brother.
Yeah, definitely. 100% Norway, £5 chocolate bar.
Nah,
can't do it, man.
For me it's cigarettes. Like, cigarettes, and so it baffles me that in some countries cigarettes are like the cheapest thing. That like they people just throw them away. It's like whatever. Then you come to England and like you have to get a small loan from Wonga to buy 20 packs. It's insane. You're kind of like, why I'm paying £12? Yes, I'm killing myself.
I know. And it's so bad because I was just in India as well, did the India tour. I haven't seen you since then. And cigarettes are so cheap there that you just can't.
But disgusting.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm out of place anymore, but I feel like I get it's this so bad for you.
I mean, I love smoking, but I'm very aware of the risks. And if I wanted to smoke, I don't. The tax on it isn't going to stop me from smoking. Like, no. I'm gonna do just it anyway. It. Like, it's the same. It's the same with drinking, with all of it. But you know,
the one that's like when I first started doing my music, I wrote this song called Addicts, which is like my first single on my record label.
Got fuck loads of listens. I saw yesterday on Spotify.
Jeez. Yeah, it's doing all right. But like, because the song was called Addicts, it was about me like and meeting this girl and getting into drinking and drugs and all this different stuff. But obviously it couldn't be like, oh, let's do a picture of a line of cocaine. So I made my own cigarette packet with like my name on it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really cool design. It was not meant to be anything but a metaphorical thing.
Mm.
But then the kids who started coming to my shows who were 14 years old are turning over packs of cigarettes and throwing them onto stage. And that really hit me, the fact that like
that you can't advertise genius. Cigarettes.
It's genius, but it's like great for me. But then like this thing
is toilet paper. I go through a lot of toilet paper, man.
I owe so a house at least 30 rolls of toilet paper. Like every time I'm broke, I'm just like, I run down great there and steal the thing and go.
Great idea.
That's my membership. Fuck.
Fuck it all. Yeah.
But yeah, so this is what I just felt bad, because like you can't advertise smoking. I just realised that like, if we could advertise smoking, that's why it's so bad. Like now kids don't smoke so much because you can't advertise it.
You think kids aren't smoking as much? Honestly, like from, you know.
I don't think they are smoking as much. Like, I feel like they've clocked on. Like, because we were part of that generation.
But it's so cool.
It's not cool.
It looks so cool.
Smoking is cool and you know it.
Branding.
I'm watching both of you smoke and I'm thinking, oh man. 2009 was a delicious year.
Delicious year.
So do you Camel lights? You know,
Camel was the one, isn't it?
Oh man!
Yeah. To be fair, Marlboro. I was
rehearsing. I'm just like miming smoking a Camel light right now.
It doesn't look like he's miming smoking. It's a hand to mouth gesture. It could be counted as smoking. It's down to you.
Hey, it's been 8 years for him.
Oh really?
No. I went through like a long period of just like. Of like poncing fags off my mates and then getting guilty and then just going, well, I'll just buy 10 fags when I go out and get drunk. I got really drunk between 2009 and like, and then, but then I had a kid and I was like, okay, I suppose now all the fun stuff has to end. But a glass of red wine with dinner, you might as well just finish the bottle.
That is
Bristol talking.
But that is also middle age approaching very quickly as well.
To say that middle age has changed now, man. It's not what you think it is now. Middle age is 60. We're gonna live for a long time.
I don't think I'm gonna live for a long time. You know,
I think you will, man.
All those cigarettes and booze.
Once you go platinum, they're gonna fucking cryogenically freeze you, man. They're gonna, you know, it's fine.
I'm waiting for my acceptance to the Illuminati. Like, that's all I want. I want to get big enough to get into the Illuminati or some shit. It sounds great.
Oh, I'd love that.
I think once you have 500 listens on Spotify.
500,000,
but I'm day drinking, so Simon, yes, 500,000 is what I meant to say.
Yeah, I've got like that, so it's alright.
Oh, Billy Big Balls. I didn't get the
invitation.
Oh man, it was last Tuesday.
Oh fuck,
you fucked up.
JK Rowling sent his. That's it. She was in there like, you got to sign yourself a fantastic piece.
Have you met her yet?
No.
Oh shit.
No.
You think she would? Like,
she thinks she'd roll through to this. Come down.
She should chill.
She loves getting boozy, doesn't she?
Who knows? She loves fighting. She's too busy fighting with Piers Morgan. Is she still fighting with Piers Morgan?
I rated that.
Piers Morgan is a cunt. Like, yeah, and I want to say this now. No, he is the biggest cunt. Like, I don't know why he's got a platform. Him and Katie Hopkins just need to be fucking sent off somewhere.
Yeah, I know. I don't.
Piers Morgan definitely knows he's a douchebag, but I think he's leaning into it.
Yeah.
But like, same with Katie Hopkins.
Yeah, he's doubling down. He's like,
yeah, I think so. I think it's really fucked up, twisted PR. That's all it is. Someone was telling me that they had Katie Hopkins on a TV show they were doing, and before the TV show, Katie was saying, "Oh, which line do you want me to take? Do you want me to take this one or this one? I'll just say whatever." I'm like, it kind of shows
you're
that
so principled.
Yeah, she doesn't care. She just wants to do it for the.
But the only issue is that, like, she's doing it, like you said, like, oh, she's just doing because it's to say stuff because they know she'll get booked for the TV show. They'll pay her loads of money because she says it's interesting as fuck having someone say the things that no one wants to hear.
But then
people believe in her and stand up with her, and that's the problem.
But how empty do you have to be that, yeah, like, completely. You will say all manner of objectionable shit just to be famous and well paid?
But like, but we live in a generation of, like, from my experiences, like, I've grown up with Instagram, Twitter and Facebook, and that's like a verification of yourself as a person straight away. Like, I kids that come to my shows, they've got more followers than anything. They've got like 30,000 followers, and that's their thing. They want to, because there's going to come a time where someone goes like, oh, I don't hang out with him, he's only got 1,000 followers.
That's, if you watch the new series of Black Mirror, there's an episode like that. That is strange. And but you have to verify it on Twitter as well. You are as well. And it's annoying.
I verified it.
And it's true, people do weirdly, like,
people completely see you differently. Yeah. Like, I know it sounds stupid. Like, you like, straight away someone follows you on Twitter and they're like, oh, you're verified. So straight away that means you must be someone. But like, it's not works like that, because cunts like Conor Maynard are verified.
I was getting bullied by Twitter eggs. That's the only reason. And I was like, and I complained to Twitter about, like,
because I imagine you get a lot of like fucking harassment, and I've seen you retweet some of it and like talk about it on Twitter as well. And I imagine it's fucking awful, like, to get all of this shit all of the time from these racist cunts.
It gets boring after a while.
Yeah,
so it gets really boring for someone to go, well, with Brexit, like, it's got nothing to do with me because I'm not white, and I just think, but I was born here. But that's not enough for you. I've got a British passport, it's not enough. And it just gets boring to have to have the same stock answers. So I the quality filter, guys.
Yeah.
It baffles me. There's no even imagination to it. You're like, okay, like, is someone not coming out with like a different, like, stupid thing to fucking say? It's just the same bullshit.
So like 20 minutes after the referendum result came in, someone tweeted me and said, I'm going to set your greasy ass on fire. Wow. And I was like, man,
what's that even mean?
Yeah. Almost sounds like he's flirting.
Exactly.
I think someone's just hitting you.
Greasy? Really?
Wow.
And like, and some guy who's like the hero of fucking Chuck Palahniuk, the author of Fight Club, who's now like this guy, I can't even remember his name, he's like this big outright blogger, wrote this like 1,000-word article about me, and basically, like, all the way through, just finds new ways of basically calling me a packy without actually calling. He called me a chubby samosa, Matt.
Oh, wow.
And do you know what is worse than a chubby samosa?
Yeah.
A thin samosa. You want your samosa
to be chubby.
Exactly.
Yeah. If anything, that's a good samosa.
Yeah, exactly.
As a quality of samosa, the chubby, the better.
I think it's good compliments, to be honest. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think he was flirting. You're right.
But the internet just baffles me with the stuff that people come out with. Like, I know, when I first started, I would always read the comments because I was like, oh, I want to see what people said about my video. And it was always nice stuff.
Yeah.
And then slowly as you start getting more people watching, like last night I looked at one of my videos and someone was like, is this the guy from Busted? Or what's happened to him? He now looks like a chubby gay crossdresser running through Soho singing karaoke songs. And I was like, I do look a little like a chubby crossdresser. I will take that on the chin. But like, seriously, what would you do with your night? Like, you're sitting there at 1 a.m. in the morning going, right, okay, I could go on Porn Up and chill out, but actually I'm going to go give this guy abuse on a video with like, what, 50,000 views? What a cunt.
Yeah.
So I'm still angered by it, actually.
I've noticed you've changed your t-shirt.
No, I was just bare hot in it.
He took his
Were you wearing two t-shirts?
No, I was wearing a vest in it.
I thought it's the piss break, also the costume change.
Mate, you got
it.
It's like, wow, these pop stars, man.
For one variation of a black t-shirt to another.
Just black attire all the time. Man, I wear black.
I mean, it looks great, so well done.
Oh, thanks, mate. It's great. It's Supreme, because obviously I'm
Supreme,
hipster.
Jesus Christ. Supreme, £800 for a black t-shirt.
Yeah, literally.
Fuck that shit.
You get to queue for
it. You should go to Savers.
Go to Savers. Buy Michael Bublé's, Stacey Solomon's, whatever. I don't care.
Mate, when I went to LA.
Perfume.
When I went to LA.
Oh, yeah, in LA.
That's right. I'd never been like to a thing. It was like Grammy time. So I'd never been to a place where you get gifts and stuff to go to a party.
Mm.
And I was at this amazing party. And this person gave me these gift bags. And I was like, oh, my days. And they were like, oh, this perfume. And I was like, shit, like free gifts.
Yeah.
I carried these bags around all of LA. Like my fucking life depended on it.
Yeah.
Got back to England, opened up this box. It was Empire, the movie themed perfume.
Oh.
No, the TV series Empire themed.
What
it smelled like cat piss and disappointment. And I was so embarrassed.
New album.
Because everyone was laughing at me at all these fucking house parties. And like, have you seen the cunt over there with his fucking gift bag running around? And I was like, the perfumes you can make, like, who needs to smell like the TV series Empire?
I don't understand.
Or Stacey Solomon.
Or Stacey.
You know what I mean? I don't get it.
I still want my own perfume. But how was LA then?
Insane. It is a crazy place.
Yeah, I fucking love LA.
I'm going to move out there because like it.
I just got it,
this is why I don't really travel much. I've never really had the opportunity to travel, and thanks to music, I have been able to travel and see places that I've never been able to go to in my life. And to go there, just like straight away, I was like, okay, people are like this. Like there is some crazy people out there, and it's like, the moment you meet someone, it's like, how are you doing? It's, hey, my name's Pete, what do you do?
Yeah.
Everyone's
selling
their CV.
Some people hate that, but I fucking love that.
I fucking hate it. Like, you go for a coffee, tell somebody you write music, next thing you know, you listen to their mixtape.
Oh, yeah. But I think it's just very honest, because people feel like that over here, except what they do in response is tell you you're shit before they've heard your music. And that's the difference. Like, at least over there, like, good friend of mine, Jason Farrand, out in LA, he's an English guy that moved out there and just directs lots of adverts. And he did an amazing TV show out there as well. And he told me that the difference between the English culture and LA more specifically, because New York's very much like London, is that in England, there's a train. And then everyone goes, oh, where's this train going to? I'm not going to get on this train until you tell me what the destination is. And then LA, everyone gets on the train, the doors close, and they go, great, cool, where are we going? You know, like, and that is the difference. Everyone kind of I would meet producer DJs out there. People do exactly the same thing as me. So I'm their direct competition, and they go, great, what do you do? Let's link up. Let's fucking go to the studio tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Everyone wants to up themselves and get further. Like, I do find it in England, there is this kind of like, especially in the music scene, it's so competitive.
Of course.
You like release something, and for every 10 people that are happy for you, there's another 20 that are like, fuck him, he's shit anyway. Why is he getting this?
Exactly.
Like, when I sell my record deal, the majority of the people that supported me before, loads of friends who are artists, then were like, nah, fuck him.
I hate that shit.
And even though nothing had changed, apart from that someone had verified me through like being like, we believe in you, they were like, nah, Matt's music shit. And I'm like, well, last week he was bopping it in the Uber. Like, why is it now shit? Well, because you ain't, like, that's how it is. It's
And then when you're one level up, they'll all take credit for it. You know, we've even had people try and take credit for introducing us.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? True. People going, oh yeah, you only work with him because I set that session up. I'm like, No.
No, I called out. I basically like slid into his DMs. I was like, hey, I think you're really, really talented. Can I work with you, man? And he was like, yeah, sure. So next thing I know, I'm in this guy's bedroom and he's playing his beats. And I'm just like, okay, cool. I don't know if I've just...
Casting couch.
Yeah. I was like, am I a hookup? Like, is there someone that's passing on a bottle of G soon? Like, what's going down?
That's it. So yeah, actually... Yeah, shit. And also, while you're here, when we were talking a bit about it in the break, but my new album that I've just finished, you're on four songs on the album.
Yeah, man.
It's fucking brilliant.
So it's been fun. It's been cool because, like, me and Corin...
Thanks for calling me up for that guest 16, by the way.
Oh, sorry. Next one.
Yeah, well, we're releasing the average album. EP now. You're more than allowed to be on it.
It's true.
Yeah, we like me and when I started first out with Corin was like long time ago. Like I was doing nothing, and Corin like helped me get like so much, put me on features that I'd never ever get and stuff. So then now with this album's came around, we've like gone back through the catalog and found the stuff that we did in the early days. And there's some gems and stuff, man. Fucking bangers. And I'm super excited about it.
We've got a song called "Don't Fall in Love with Me" that's now called "Keep It Simple." Changed the name. That he released on. It's very, very boring information until it becomes a hit and people are going to listen back to this and go, oh shit, this is great. And this is you released it on your SoundCloud on like Christmas Day two years ago, and it fucking went mad. But I'm going to leave that conversation there because I'm getting bored of myself. All I know is that it's a fucking wonderful album, and thank you for being on that.
Thank you for having me on it.
And so you're saying the fans are it's very fucking weird, and I imagine you've encountered it in negative ways, but I imagine you've had some weird positive things as well happening. Like, have you had anything kind of strange, like, not necessarily negative, but have you had strange things coming out of having this book out there, like the latest book?
Yeah. Like, people come up to you and go, this book has changed my life. Like, today, I was at London Book Fair, and I was running to the toilet because I had 20 minutes to get before I got the train to you, and then I was like, I need a piss. Yeah. This is gold information, by the way.
Yeah. Great. No, we need
literally
it.
Golden.
We
need
it. Golden information.
Golden shower information.
Actually, it was cloudy white because I'm quite well hydrated, but
I also
not hydrated enough.
Yeah. This guy was like, "Oh, you seem like you're in a rush, but I just need to tell you your book changed my life." And I was like, I said to him like my thought process, which was like, how do you react to that while you're running for a piss? And he was like, oh no, I don't want to get in your. And I was like, no man, it's really really nice. And he tweeted me later, and I was like, that's a really nice thing. That's kind of like it's really made my.
Did you follow back?
Yeah, of course I did.
Oh, that's nice.
He was a nice guy. But
I don't ever
check this information later in case it's alternative news.
The weirdest thing, it wasn't weird, but I kind of knew that this conversation was going to happen. Like the first gig we did on this tour, we did this massive tour in like September, October, November. The first gig, Waterstones Bristol, like a really big Waterstones, me, Coco Khan, Himesh, Tamar off EastEnders, and Darren. And we did our thing, and like the audience question thing, which is always like really difficult because like there's always some guy who goes, it's less of a question and more of a comment, really.
Oh,
and
Jesus no.
And you're like, fuck off,
snipers.
Man. Just ask me a question. And this woman put her hand up and she said, how does it feel that we're all white here and you're all just talking, telling us about racism and we're all white? How does that make you feel? And we were like, have you looked behind you? And she was like, well, what do you mean? And we were like, well, from where we're sitting, this is one of the most diverse, multiracial crowds that we've ever seen. And like, that is the spirit of the book. And she turned around and like the whole, like she just doesn't expect to see those faces in that space in Waterstones. So she's just erased, they don't exist in her head. And like for me, like having done book events for years and years and years, to finally have a book event that actually feels like the community you grew up in, or like, you know, like the London you feel like it, or like the city that you feel is like your beautiful multiracial city.
Yeah.
Even in like Durham, which is like Harry Potter for posho whatever university town, like it was still loads and loads of brown and black people and like East Asian people in the audience, and we were like, you do exist in Durham, you do exist. And that's been the really great thing for me, is like kind of it's almost like you're disrupting these spaces that are so used to.
And that's great, and it's also because you're creating a space that is, I hate the word safe space, but you are creating that so that people of all ethnicities can come and feel like it is for them and not just, this is an important point, even though I'm drunk, it's not just a book for white people from people from ethnic minorities, or it's not just an album of musicians from Mali or wherever.
Yeah, it's not like rough, to perform. Rough Trades Guide to Botswana,
precisely, kind of. and that is quite a difference that a lot of people don't.
Yeah, it's a thing for everyone. And what's been really interesting is, like, because there is a lot of, like, you refer to white people when you're doing the thing, and you notice that people really bristle when you say white people. And there's this comedian, Hari Kondubolu, brother of Ashok, who was in the band with Heems. Like, he has this joke where he's like, white people hate being referred to as white people because up until recently they were just called people.
Right.
And that's a really interesting thing. Like, that's where this conversation has now moved on to, where people can be like, let's just be a bit more honest about how we feel about these things.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was so stark, like, when I went to, like, it was one of the Damon Albarn Africa Express concerts, and I went there, and it's no fault of his or the organizers, but it was just the Syrian National Orchestra performing, and I kind of looked and I was like, this is beautiful, you know, like, the music is obviously incredible.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked and I was like, yeah, oh, Paul Weller's come out, he's performing, this is sick, you know, and musicians from Syria. And then I look out to the audience at South Bank and I couldn't spot one non-white face.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's a beautiful Syrian community in London. Like, there's, you know, there's a huge Arabic community in London.
Yeah.
Why is no one, like, here in the audience? Why do they not feel like this is a space where they can come and enjoy music that's like, I think I was probably the most Arabic person there, like, you know, only a quarter. Because, like,
this place feels intimidating.
Yeah.
Royal Festival Hall. Yeah. Like, it feels like people who have bought the seats that they're sitting on, they've got, like, a season ticket for that seat. Or, like, it doesn't always feel... And that's a bad example because, like, the programming at South Bank is all about, like, bringing as many people in as possible.
Yeah.
Like, whether they are successful or not, they still have every intention of doing it.
They do, yeah.
And, like, when we went to the Africa Express in Bristol, like, it was really nice to see it was a really diverse audience in there. But then I think Bristol just naturally is a bit more.
It's quite. I feel like London, has got that thing. Like, I find it strange when you leave London and it isn't so multicultural and it going to different places and you're like, oh,
What, in the tour? Or
the whole entire 2 weeks, not one person.
But are you thinking that's sort of the type of music or like. Or
it's just one of those things. You just got like, how. Like, I'm just so used to being everyone from everywhere, and like you said, like, it's, I don't know, it just scared me a little bit.
Well, we're in a weird fucking time, you know, really weird.
It's weird seeing
time.
All these people come back, like the people that I thought didn't exist,
yeah, come out, like, of the woodwork.
And from what I've found is, like, sometimes you meet people and they start talking about it thinking because you're white that you're also going to be thinking the same as them, and you're like, they see them, they're like, oh yeah man, like, Brexit is great, isn't it? You're like, no, it's fucking not. It's awful.
Yeah.
And but they're assuming, but they, because you're from Ken and you're like middle class white, you're gonna be like,
listen,
yeah,
I've had weird ones where obviously no, I look fucking white as fuck, and people have come up to me and start like, those Arabs. Does whatever,
you said,
and I'm
about,
just
you
like,
asked someone once at a fucking session, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and having a session, or like, I had like an A&R just like started going on at me about like Muslims, and I was like,
what?
And I'm like, and I went for a start, like, and I just went, when people start talking, I don't go off and want to shout immediately. I just start trying to slowly take a deep breath and calmly break down. But they felt comfortable because I look white and I'm, you know, three quarters white. They're like, they assume that I don't have an Arabic last name and I'm not whatever Tunisian. And then I'm just like, so are you saying that, like, you believe that about my granddad? Is that what you think? Because, like, I'm starting to feel away right now. So let's talk about this. And I'm like, and it's very, very strange.
It's
that kind of,
like, the safe space thing. Like, there's some beautiful moments where everyone feels safe or together and there's no one cares. And that's, I feel like, definitely my generation of kids growing up are a lot more like that. They,
you think, is there, Nikesh, is there more hope for this next generation?
No, fucking kids, shut up.
So is there hope for that next generation of dickhead kids showing outside my window?
Yes. I'm like, my day job is as a youth worker, and I work with young people, like, editing a magazine where that they all contribute to, and, you know, really work with them to kind of like build their voice and stuff. And the kids I work with are more politically progressive than I am. Like, I'm still learning, whereas for them it's all quite natural. And so, like, they're having conversations about gender and sexuality and class and race I'm having to go, I'm just going to do some reading on Wikipedia before I commit to an opinion. I wonder what The Atlantic thinks. And it's really nice. And I'm convinced with all these conversations around diversity and like what's happening in politics, we're just waiting for the old racists to die out. We're hoping that like the racism will give them an early heart attack, but they will die soon.
I really hope so. And that is, you know what? And that's a beautiful point to end episode 12 of the Thanks for Trying podcast. Thank you so much to my wonderful guests, Nikesh Shukla and Matt Wills, for coming down. Thank you, guys. And what I should say before we stop it is The Good Immigrant is out now in all good bookstores everywhere.
And mediocre bookstores.
And average bookstores everywhere. And online, I'm guessing it's Kindle and you can get it on everywhere. And Matt Wills' new single, Emily, is out now. Is it out on iTunes as well? Or just Spotify? It's out everywhere. Emily, go listen to that.
It's had over 500 views.
You're Illuminati, you're calling me right now. Sorry, that's why we're ending it now, because you're Illuminati on the phone. I've got 500 plays on Spotify. All my nan.
All right, big up. Cool. You have been listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 12. Big thank you to my guests, Matt Wills and Nikesh Shukla. Matt Wills' new single, Emily, is out now. Nikesh Shukla's book, The Good Immigrant, is out now too, so make sure you go support both of those. Big thank you to Seb White. We will return next month.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.